This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. We are live at the Hatback Bar and Grill. It is opening day, everybody. Fired up for baseball. Mariners getting down to business tonight versus the Boston Red Sox. And we kick things off in fine fashion, Dave. This is where you start off an opening day.
Yes, it is.
You bring in one of the highfalutin front office guys. We said, give us somebody who's telling people what to do. And they said, all right, we'll give you the senior vice president of marketing and communications, the one, the only, Kevin Martinez. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. They threw you to me. So I will try to not disappoint, but we appreciate you guys being here. You can already feel the energy in the neighborhood. Wish the weather was a little better, but hey, we're Pacific Northwest people. We'll party through anything.
So, and you got a roof, which is key.
The inside the ballpark is going to be great. It's just the whole pregame vibe. We're trying to get started, and we can party in the rain, though. We're not intimidated.
Well, before we get into all the particulars of what's going on today, I got to ask you, just as a baseball fan, just as a guy, you were down there watching this team through spring, you watch them every year, does this feel different to you? That's the one thing somebody asked me, what stood out to you? I'm like, stats are great and everything, but it's spring. It was sort of the unified message and the unified confidence everybody we spoke to had.
Well, I'll give you my take and be interested to hear yours, because you were all there. You experienced it firsthand. And, we get down early before pitchers and catchers report to set up all of our production elements and get ready to work with the guys. And what struck me, having done this now for three decades, is that the position players were already there before some of the pitchers and catchers.
Yeah.
All of the nucleus of the team was already in Arizona, and they didn't have to report for another week. And I think there's this sense of unfinished business. None of us in the organization or our fans are happy with the way things finished. And these guys just came in this spring with a real focus. And the other thing that strikes me, and again, you guys have a front row seat too, is how cohesive and how much these guys in that clubhouse like each other. And Dave, you played, and you know, when you like going to work with the people and you got each other's back, good things can happen. And I honestly see that and believe that this group of guys, they've got each other's backs, and they really like being around each other. And the new acquisitions fit in seamlessly.
Well, and I think also the way the season ended, there were some people that weren't happy, and a lot of fans.
Absolutely.
Go from that to the feeling now is quite the turnaround, really, because it started off, everybody was a little bit pissed off about, the way things happened, including guys like Cal. And now, there's none of that, and it just felt down there like this is maybe the tightest team that they've had in a long time, and maybe it's because of that adversity and the way they handled it.
I think sometimes adversity, it does. It's not sometimes. It brings people together if you've got the right people going at it. And these guys, most of them have come up with the organization or have been acquired at a young age and have been part of this organization. And there's a sense of pride. Those guys want to be the first team to bring a championship in Major League Baseball to the Pacific Northwest. And they're focused. And, they were pissed last year that they didn't get it done. And everybody was. And I'm excited to get the party started tonight. I looked at the starting lineup, and Ty France is hitting in the eighth spot. You talk about a long lineup. That's exciting as heck, because Ty's one of the best hitters in the game, and we're just looking forward to this offense, this reimagined offense going at it.
You guys have so much that happens during 81 games in a regular season, whether the promotions and everything, the giveaways. From the end of the season to the beginning, how much time do you have off? Are you in planning right away? Like, all right, let's get to work. Here's what I've got in mind. Let's share ideas. Or is that immediate? Or do you take a couple weeks to catch your breath? When does this planning start?
We've got a remarkable group of people in that front office that care so passionately about the organization and just this whole region. It really starts around the All-Star break. And last year, because we hosted the All-Star game, we had to kind of push it back. But the the planning starts mid-season for next year, kind of starts mid-season this year, maybe a little bit earlier. You roll up your sleeves and you really get after it in November. You take a breath if you're not in the postseason in October. You take a breath in October. And then, you know, you utilize the time in November to kind of get everything in place. And come January 1st, Bob, I mean, you're 6 weeks away from Arizona. So you got to kind of have everything buttoned down and ready to go. And we got a great lineup of events this season, as we always strive to do. A lot of fan feedback that we acted upon. And, yeah, we believe now with all of the changes that we've made the last couple of years, Mariners baseball is more accessible and affordable than ever. We've got three big nights coming up, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're trying something new, and this was a conversation with our fans. The bobbleheads tend to be a very popular item. Well, we're taking the Julio Rodriguez no-fly zone bobblehead, and we're putting it on 3 days, Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday night. All 3 dates are value games, so you can get a ticket as low as $10 and come and get a bobblehead. There'll be 10,000 bobbles all year. Trying something new. We'll see how it goes and what the response is.
10,000 each night.
That's right. 10,000 each night of the same bobblehead, just to give more opportunity for people on different nights. Sometimes we heard, oh, you had it on this night. I couldn't get there because I had X or Y or Z. So we're trying something new. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, this ballpark, as I think you guys saw, USA Today ranked it in the top 10 in ballparks in the country. It's a great place. There's some new improvements in there to make the fan experience better. So we're ready to open up the gates today, 2 hours before. We encourage everybody to get down here early and bring the energy, because the guys feed off it for sure.
Kevin, you got a timing sheet here for us at 6:32. I don't know if you want to divulge this. It says fire trident performance. There's going to be fire?
There is going to be fire. There's going to be fire on the field. Hopefully we don't torch the place.
Luckily it's raining.
And if it does, it was a pleasure working with all of you.
Are you going to leave the roof open for this one, maybe?
We're hoping we can have the roof open. We hope to have a flyover. The flyover wouldn't happen if the roof is closed. I don't think that will happen. We've got some pyrotechnics. But if the roof is closed, it's a little bit of a smaller of a production. We like to do opening day big. I think we do it as good as anybody in Major League Baseball. And it's always rocking. And I always say opening day in Seattle feels more like a rock concert than it does a baseball game.
Well, and you've got a guy out there throwing out the first pitch who may be universally regarded as one of the nicest people in pro sports.
Yeah.
The great Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, just a tremendous guy. And, you know, John's idea, John Stanton, when he heard Nelly was retiring, John said, we've got to call Nelly and have him the first pitch. And, I mean, Nelly didn't – it was no sooner was the announcement made than John was on the phone to him, inviting him to come here. They have such a special relationship, and Nelson has such a special relationship with the fans here. We're thrilled that he made the trip back, and that'll be a really memorable moment when he comes out tonight.
Well, and it seems like since him, we haven't had a DH, and now Mitch Garver tonight, he's in the four spot.
Yep.
That's feel pretty good about him. I mean, that's one thing a lot of fans in the offseason were talking about. How about DH? Hasn't been an important position for a long time.
Yeah, and it is an important position. And Mitch really personifies the vision that Jerry and Justin and Scott had, how they want to remake this lineup and the type of approach that they want to have this year. And we saw what he can do in spring, but then we learned what type of guy he is and what he's going to mean in the clubhouse as well, and it's a twofer. So what a great addition to the ball club.
So you got opening night, you got Nelson Cruz throwing out the first pitch, you got tridents that'll be on fire everywhere, and you got Julio bobblehead.
Yeah,
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
That's right.
Before we let you go, any tickets left for tonight, or is it done?
Yeah, tonight's a sellout. I think they just made some standing room available.
Okay.
So there might be something. I don't want to give any wrong information. I think if you can go on Mariners.com, you can find some standing room available. But tickets are sold out. But to your point, we've got three more games with Boston: Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Plenty of tickets available for those games. And then the three value games next week, Monday through Wednesday, with the Julio Rodriguez bobblehead against the Cleveland Guardians. And they're all value games, $10 to get in. So
Let's
make it a week-long party and get this baseball season off on the right foot.
Fired up, man.
Yeah.
I can't
appreciate
wait.
All you guys being here and the energy and the support. We just got to keep it rolling all summer.
Absolutely. He is Kevin Martinez, Mariners Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications, and just a highfalutin guy who's just a sweetheart of a guy. We appreciate you, man. Thanks to Kevin. Coming up, we've got some Mariners roster news and plenty more going on around baseball to catch up on. That's coming up next as we continue live from the Hatback Bar and Grill. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Opening day, you're listening to Wyman and Bob live from Hatback Bar and Grill.
That is exactly where we are at the Hatback Bar and Grill right across the street from T-Mobile Park. It is opening day for your Seattle Mariners, and we cannot wait for things to get underway. Our thanks to Kevin Martinez, who joined us to open the show. We got President of Baseball Operations, Jerry DePoto, scheduled to join us at 2:30. We'll talk to Paul Moyer coming up at 3 o'clock. Dave Sims, part of the Mariners broadcast team, voice of the team, will join us at 3:30. And Logan Gilbert, one of our all-time favorites on this team, will join us at 4:30. So we've got a packed show getting you prepped and ready for opening day. So stay tuned for all of it. Meanwhile, let's get to take two.
Well, two new relievers, Cody Bolton and Colin Snyder, have made the Mariners' opening day roster. Unfamiliar names, but Bolton was traded from the Pirates for cash considerations in November, and Snyder was claimed off waivers in February. And now, tough news for this show, Taylor Trammell was also designated for assignment.
Yeah, we kind of knew that was coming, and I don't imagine he's going to clear. I would imagine a team's going to pick him up. I hope they do, and if not, then maybe he can get back into the Mariners' system. One way or the other, but he's a guy I don't imagine will be sitting out there very long. He's loaded with ability. It just putting it together in a consistent way has been tough.
Always unfortunate when you got a guy that you just really love. You really like him. I think we've had that with the Seahawks. You know, you fall in love with a guy, and yeah, Taylor Trammell, one of the best guys. But yeah, it's kind of nice seeing the relievers, Cody Bolton and Colin Snyder, make the team. Just, you know, I just feel like every time one of the bullpen guys come in, you go, oh, okay, here's a guy I can I gotta learn something about. Next thing you know, he's Gabe Spire. It just seems like they do a really good job with their bullpen there. So welcome to Cody Bolton and Colin Snyder. Looking forward to seeing those guys.
Play some scores around the AL West. Mike Trout hit a home run off Corbin Burns in his first at-bat of the season, the new acquisition for the Orioles. But Adley Rutschman has driven in two and scored three runs. The Orioles are up big right now, 8-1 over the Angels in the bottom of the seventh. And the Astros scored three runs in the first inning. They now lead the Yankees 4-0. They're going to the fifth there. Meanwhile, the Rangers host the Cubs at 4:35.
Yeah, it's quite a start for the Orioles, a team that everybody's very high on. They're incredibly young. They're inexpensive right now. See if they're able to hold it together. This has been a notoriously thrifty organization when it comes to spending, but they do have new ownership now, so we'll see how much that changes. But, yeah, Rutschman driving in two home runs from Mike Trout. Baseball season is underway, and I love it.
Yeah, Trout hit the first home run of the season, as you mentioned, but also I don't know. I kind of root for that guy. The Angels obviously don't really care for guys like Rendon and some of their staff, but I root for Mike Trout. Do you?
Yeah, he's not unlikable. He's quiet. He doesn't say anything. He kills the Mariners. I don't like him when he's here.
Yeah,
but he's a guy that is a baseball fan. I appreciate. He's a guy I'll if Angels game is on in the background, I'm at home. I'm gonna watch when he's up at the plate. If I'm doing something, yeah, I'm gonna make a point. All right, what's Trout gonna do? All right, then I walk off.
He's so powerful, man. And he hit a breaking ball, and you know, it was like looked like it went pretty far. I think that might be a home run. But anyway, nice that baseball is back. And that was honestly, I turned the TV on and was watching that very first game, and the very first thing I saw was Trout hitting a home run. So welcome to baseball season.
Yeah, by the way, Rendon chipping in. He is playing. He's 0-3 with an error today. So that's good news. That's good news. Too bad.
It's okay. He doesn't care.
Yeah,
doesn't really care about it. That doesn't bother him.
That'll be somebody I actively root against this year. Yeah. That's not on the Astros. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. As we said, we got a lot coming up. We got Jerry DePoto scheduled to join us at 2:30. Our buddy Paul Moyer will be with us. We'll talk to Logan Gilbert. We'll talk to Dave Sims and maybe some other people. We'll see what's going on over there. I'm hoping the rain will let up a bit. It'd be nice to have the roof open for the What would the tridents? Over, the tridents that were going to be lit on
the
fire?
What is trident?
The official description is what? Fire trident performance.
I guess they could do that with the roof closed. But in terms of fireworks and certainly the flyover.
Is it going to be like one of those things you see at the luau where they're spinning fire,
I don't know.
You think?
Seems dangerous.
Not only are they're sharp, but they're on fire.
Yeah, it seems like you're asking
they're
for double
trouble.
They're
going to throw them
into the stands. Yeah, that's a perfect souvenir.
Kind of like the t-shirt machine.
Yeah, they're going to fire them through a can.
Tridents.
Flaming arrows will be next. That'll be the
I
next
killed promotion. A guy with a trident.
Yeah, I saw that. That escalated quickly.
It might be wanted for murder.
Got to keep your head on a swivel. Yeah, it is opening day. Lots of positivity out here. People feeling good about what could be for the Mariners this season. And we'll talk more about that. Meanwhile, how does the Mariners front office feel about this opening day roster? President of Baseball Operations, Jerry DePoto, will tell us. He's going to join us next as we continue live from the Hatback Bar and Grill. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob, live from Hatback Bar and Grill on opening day.
We are back live at the Hatback Bar and Grill. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. Mariners opening day is finally here. Been waiting for this like it's Christmas, and we're unwrapping our presents today. And one of our presents is the president of baseball operations, Jerry DePoto, who is here with us in person. How are you, man?
I've never been called a present before, but I do hope this season is a gift.
How excited do you get for opening day? Because you see, you're the one putting it all together. The pieces are all in place, and now you're getting through spring. You're praying for health, and here's opening day. What's this like for you?
Usually the feeling is we plan, and you feel like opening day is never going to get here. And then opening day arrives, and there's not enough time to do what you want to do. Until today, this is probably the most predictable roster we've had in a number of years. Today, we've had nothing but time. And you're like, let's go. Can we play the game like now? I'm excited for this team. I'm excited like I am most opening days. But this opening day, I am particularly excited about the depth of this club, the quality of our lineup, the rotation that we run out there night after night. It should be a fun year.
Interesting sort of indication that you have Ty France batting eighth. That's a guy who just hits, and maybe he climbs up in the order. But you talked about that all spring training about the depth, and that kind of exhibits that in your lineup.
We really didn't see it until we got to San Diego over the last couple of days, and saw the way the lineup lays out when they're all playing. And the lineup today doesn't even include Luke Raley or Luis Urias, who had a good spring training and has been a good player on playoff clubs. I think the depth of this club is maybe its strength right now. And Ty France is a year removed from being an American League All-Star for 2 years, I think one of the highest WRC pluses of any right-handed hitter in baseball. And I'm sure that's not where he's going to reside when we're facing lefties. But Ty's pretty platoon neutral. It doesn't matter if it's a righty or lefty. And he looked good in the spring. But I think it's a testament to the way the lineup, looks when we are fully healthy. And that's a good thing, positive thing for us.
What do you, as a guy that went through spring as a player and now as somebody in the front office, what is it you're looking for? Because we've all sort of gotten to this point where we're going, yeah, stats, good or bad, you kind of push them to the side. What is it you're looking for to give you an indication as to how somebody is doing?
I think our spring training went in the right order. We started off slowly. That first week or so, our offense was trying to figure itself out, and you don't see a lot of guys playing together. There is a value, I'm sure, like in most other sports, when the A team plays together and they get a sense for one another on the field. They feed off one another in a lineup. And I think they're in the last 2 weeks of spring training for us. We were clicking on all cylinders. The pitching started to get progressively better, but the lineup just kept getting longer and longer. And then you saw it in San Diego that first night, when the Mitches are playing and Ty's in the lineup with Cal Raleigh, and you're not getting the five innings and out. I thought that was what you're looking for, is finish on a hot note. Everybody came out healthy, especially with among the position player group, and go into the regular season on a little bit of a roll where you feel good about your offensive game.
For you, looking at how Ryan Bliss had a really good spring, and then Canzone and Rojas look pretty good. I mean, that's got to be particularly rewarding when something like that kind of comes together. I mean, you kind of have to suck it up in the beginning and then see these guys come into fruition. Fruition's got to be rewarding for you.
It is. And, you know, they still have 162 and hopefully more to play, but couldn't be more excited about where Dom was in the spring. And you could see from day one, you know, I think I mentioned the last time I was with you guys, his off-season preparation. I mean, he looked like he lived in the gym. And, you know, I joked, he looked like he was trying out for the Browns when he showed up the first day of spring training. And, you know, the way he approached the spring, he's a quiet guy. He works hard. You know, the very first day that he came in, Brant Brown and JD got with him and they talked about, like, lightening up his leg kick. And I think you see a little subtler version of him in the box, and it's allowing him to track pitches for a little bit longer. We saw him do damage from pole to pole. And he hits the ball as hard as anybody we have. He hits the ball as frequently as anybody we have. And, you know, I think it bodes well, and he gets to start on opening day. I hope it's not the last one he ever sees.
As far as pitching these days versus when you were pitching, is there a unique difference that you see? Is there just everybody's more velocity these days? We also see more, it feels like more injuries, and I don't know if that's because of increased velocity, but how do you compare when you were pitching versus what we see these days?
I feel like it's just a different game for a pitcher. And you know, when we were pitching, maybe there's Randy Johnson and you know, Billy Wagner, who I can remember throwing that hard.
Right.
And now I saw a note this morning that this past season there were 62 different pitchers who hit 100 miles an hour. And, you know, that's just an absurdly high number. And I don't care if your ball is straight as a string. If you're throwing 100 miles an hour, that's hard. It's hard to trigger a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, and it really does affect the secondary weapons that these guys have. Because, you know, I know when we were playing in the 90s, a good fastball was 92, 93 miles an hour. You know, the hard throwers were throwing 94, 96 miles an hour. You know, now that's kind of your average guy. And the breaking balls have risen with the tide. And now you see a slider that's, you know, Matt Brash's best slider is probably 92 miles an hour. You know, Gregory Santos' slider is 91, 92 miles an hour. That's impossible to imagine 30 years ago. But, you know, the game evolved.
Do you think that contributes to injury at all? Do you feel like injuries are more frequent now versus when you played? Or is it just we pay more attention now?
You know, I think part of it is that we now know that obliques exist, you know. We didn't have obliques. I think we joked around. We did a little get-together last night, and Scott and I were talking, and we joked around. Like, in the 90s, players looked like we look. And, you know, now players look like Julio. That's a big difference, you know. They're so tightly wound. There's a lot less body fat being thrown around in major league clubhouses. It's year-round training. It's nutritionists. It's weight room. And I give the players credit. They have taken their game to a different level in physical preparation. And we see it on the field, the quality of stuff. And it has to result in a few more injuries because you're dealing with taut, you know, tightly wound athletes. And that certainly, I guess, clouds the picture.
You need more guys like David Wells, right, with that build?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with a kid, you know, Williams Astudillo. Who doesn't like that?
If you don't have an oblique, you can't pull it. And look, I'm older than you, but I said the exact same thing. I'm like, we didn't even have that, you know? I mean, nobody knows what an oblique is. But, I mean, also it makes it very important, like your staff, your medical staff, and shutting guys down. And it seems like you guys sort of err on the side of caution when it comes to that. Is that pretty much the same as every team medically?
You know, I don't know if it's every team. I know our group is very in tune with preventative medicine, you know. And from Rob Scheidegger to Kyle Torgerson and our training staff, we have really stressed, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, getting in the training room, doing your preventative exercises, making sure that you're doing what you can to avoid injury, because once the 162 start, it just starts to beat you down. And we tend to err on the side of caution. We will give guys, you know, prescribed days off. And sometimes they don't love it, you know, especially those guys that pride themselves on playing every day, like a JP or a Ty France. But, you know, you have to be the mature one in the room to say, we're trying to play, you know, beyond 162 games here, let's take a little time now to ensure that we have some later.
Hey, just real quick, with Mitch Haniger, I feel like he's different, like you've talked about. Well, we got to, you know, limit his innings and things like that, but it just seems like he's not worn down. He's gotten, like, been in car accidents, basically. Is that the case with him, or is it helpful to kind of cut back some innings with Mitch?
He's had, you know, his injuries have been kind of bizarre injuries that right. you can't avoid. You know, right. it's not as if he's going out there and tweaks. It's not a lot of soft tissue. It's not a lot of he's missing time right. because he's not tough enough to get on the field. We've not really encountered too many players tougher than Mitch through the years. He's just had really bizarre injuries. Now, I say that, and he's now in his 30s, and he has had some back issues. It's keeping him off his feet from time to time we have found to be very productive, especially, you know, in his last full season with us in 2022. You know, that's something that he and Scott did really well together. They communicated on the front end about how Mitch was feeling that day or going into that week, tried to predetermine what day we could give him down and get him off of his feet to ensure that we had more time on the back end of it. And, you know, I think it worked. And especially those last 2 years in 21 and 22, you know, we got the best of Mitch when he was on the field. And that's the version we want. And if it's less than 162 games, that's what we expect. If it's more than 120, we're going to be a good team. And I think that's the goal, is to put Mitch on the field as frequently as we can get him out there.
Hey, is going back to your pitching days once again, how would you have adjusted to the pitch clock? Because they adjusted it again this year, and I saw, I can't remember which pitcher was talking about it, saying, well, I feel like that can lead to more injuries. I'm thinking shaving 2 seconds, it seems a stretch. I don't know. You tell me, does it feel like this is a good thing, or is this bad for pitchers? How do you view the pitch clock?
I think it's a good thing. You know, I don't know if this comes off in my personality, but, you know, I was a little bit hyperactive as a pitcher.
It comes off, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, I was a little bit hyperactive. And you know, growing up, I watched Tug McGraw a lot. And, you know, Tug McGraw never left the rubber. You know, it was just grab it, throw. And I think as a pitcher, you put yourself at a great advantage if you don't give the hitter an opportunity to adjust or to clear his mind before the next pitch comes. And, you know, you watch guys, and I don't want to be to degrade the stuff of pitchers through the years, but Mark Burley, Kirk Reeder, you know, these were not the stuffiest guys in the history of baseball, and they had awesome careers because they worked at lightning speed. They never gave you a chance to adjust, and it was a constant game of back and forth. So I think we're at advantage if we work faster. Our pitchers typically do. And, you know, we don't complain about it as a team. It's something that we have, I guess, baked into our approach or our teaching on pitching at the lowest levels of the minor leagues. And when they get to the big leagues, this is just part of what they do.
Tell us about George Kirby. I feel like we haven't talked about him that much. And, you know, we always talk to Logan Gilbert and, you know, but how's his development been? How do you feel about him going into the season?
You know, George, in a lot of ways, I think George, not talking about George is a compliment to George.
Yeah.
He is, you expect excellence. I think he's a legitimate candidate to win a Cy Young this year. And, you know, last year, obviously, his first All-Star appearance. And I think, you know, the month of September got stuck in George's teeth a little bit. And I think he came in with a little bit of an edge. You know, and he knows what he's capable of. He has every pitch in the book. If he doesn't have it, he makes it up along the way. He's got about as good a command as any pitcher who I've seen pitch at the major league level. He's smart. He understands the opponent. And it's not just that he has the weapons. It's that the weapons on a given day are overwhelming. You know, you're not getting 6 average pitches. You're getting 5 well above average pitches to elite when you count in or factor in the locations. So his development is well ahead of where it might be. And I think this year he's pitching at 26, which for most players, you know, that 26 to 29-year-old zone, if you go back and look at the greatest of the great, they're usually having their best seasons in their late 20s. And George is in that category. And I think I will say this about Kirby. He's also going to be the guy where you look up at 36 and you're thinking, man, he's still doing these things, because it comes easier for him than it does for most guys that you'll ever watch.
How amazing is it to see command like that from somebody that young in the game in terms of his experience at the big league level? In each year he's been here, he's had more starts than walks. He's had fewer walks than total starts.
It's crazy, right?
You don't see. For a guy that young and inexperienced against the best, That's unreal.
It's the first thing that attracted us to George when he was at Elon, and you know, it's his draft season, and he's going to a smaller school. He might not have pitched against the highest end competition. You know, his summer in Cape Cod, he was primarily pitching as a reliever, so we were seeing shorter outings. And the thing that stood out, this guy throws the ball where he wants to throw the ball. And, you know, if you value that as an organization, which we do, you know, dominate that strike zone, he came with that in his pocket. And once we said to him, this to us is the most important thing you can do, he got even better at it and started filling it up at rates that you don't see from players who've played in this league for a decade. And he's done it. He started doing it when he was a baby. I love that that's something he's great at. You don't even think about it. And I love that if he walks a hitter, it's like a personal affront.
He's
mad.
Know?
Oh, yeah. And I like that about it and about George. And I think that starts to rub off on a lot of the other guys because of the level of expectation he holds himself to. You know, it everybody else needs to live up to that. And in that way, he leads.
You look at this this roster this year. Is there a guy that you're particularly, like, proud of, like, I'm glad I stuck with that guy, or a guy that you saw something that maybe other people didn't? Anybody like that?
Yeah, I guess there's a few along the way. The one I would point to, because now it's been, you know, it's been 6 years, Dylan Moore, sneaky. He just keeps on plugging along. He's a productive player. He plays virtually every position on the field. You know, you look back at, you know, when we signed Dylan in 2019, he had never played a major league game. He had a bit of an up-and-down track record as a minor leaguer, but we saw an athlete who could hit the ball hard, who had sneaky power, you know, who was a minor league free agent. We offered him a major league contract, you know, in order to get him to come our way. And he made our opening day club that year, and that first day he made three errors, if you'll recall, against the Red Sox on opening day here.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
oh, man.
It was our home opener. You know, I think that year we played two games in Japan, and that home opener, we were playing Boston, and Demo entered the game, made three errors in the ninth inning, and it got very dicey, to say the least. And you know, he pulled out of it, and has turned into, you know, a really reliable player who hits left-hand pitching, who has been, you know, kind of, when we get on our hot streaks, Dylan Moore is usually doing something that you're not noticing, whether it be run the bases, subbing in at various positions, starting against the lefties, hitting the key homer against, you know, the late lefty reliever. And I don't know that many people give him enough credit for the career that he's had to this point.
You know, we've talked a lot about the bullpen, and certainly you don't feel good when Brash and Santos aren't starting the season. Hopefully it's just minor and they're going to be who we expect them to be. But this organization has had a really nice run of taking guys we've never heard of and turning them into guys you rely on and become high leverage guys. Like, I'm thinking of Penn Murphy. We interviewed him. I'm going, who the hell is Penn Murphy? I've never heard of it. Gabe Spire, Justin Topa. I mean, these are, you know, unless you're a hardcore geek, you don't know who these people are, yet you've turned them into really productive elements in that bullpen. Is there something that is different with how you approach the bullpen here versus, you think, other organizations? Or what do you attribute the success to?
We are hardcore geeks. Yeah, and we dig in, and you know, from bottom to top and top to bottom, we have a list of guys that we're currently rolling with. We want to acquire these players, and it's because we think there's something that we can do to help them become a better version of themselves. So, you know, at the cost of being cliche, we think about it that way. And you know, we saw it with Gabe Spire, we saw it with Topa. You know, we've seen
Paul
it in the
Sewald.
Past. Paul Sewald was as good an example as anybody. And you know, it's Pete Woodworth, it's Trent Blank, it's formerly Max Wiener, it is currently Matt Pierpont, it's our analysts, Joel Furman, John Edwards in our front office. They do a phenomenal job of finding the right guy that we can put into our pitching machine. And when I say that, I mean our pitching development machine. And they sit down with the pitcher, and we talk to him about a very simple plan for how he's going to get better. And the guys that buy into it quickly have seen a pretty remarkable shift in their career. And that's good for everybody. We get impact relief. They get, you know, they're having more fun because they're having success and they're putting themselves in position to contribute to a better team and make a better living, because you're going to crank out a little bit more earnings potential with some of what our group has been able to do.
maybe this isn't something that this is too simple of a question, I guess, but what will we see out of Brant Brown as far as his contribution to the offensive side of the ball? Or is it just going to be something very, very subtle? Or is it going to be put the ball in play, get the guys run on the bases? Well, tell me what we're going to see from him.
If you've spent any time around Brownie, and we have, you know, not just this spring, but we've, you know, Brownie was with us, you know, back when we first got here in 2015-16. There's nothing subtle about Brant Brown. He is Brownie is oftentimes the biggest personality in the room. The thing I love about Brownie, he is not too afraid to say the thing that needs to be said, no matter who he's saying it to. And you know, that's such an important trait, especially for a major league coach, because so frequently you can get in a position with accomplished players, guys who have been all-stars or MVP candidates, and or just playing successful major league careers, and you hesitate because you can't say that to a big leaguer. Brownie says it. And I think it's career changing for a lot of guys. We have already seen adjustments to our pregame planning, to the way we communicate about who we're playing that day. You know, I've used this reference internally for a while. You know, in many ways, we were asking Jarrett DeHart to be a one-arm wallpaper hanger. It's just go, go, go. You're going to be the guy that fixes the swings. You're going to be the guy that runs the swing camps. You're going to be the guy that identifies potential draftees or trade targets. And, oh, by the way, prepare for this series against that pitcher and convey it to our team in a way that they can digest it. Brownie has taken a lot of the latter part of that off of JD's plate, let him focus on swings. He spends most of his time, you know, at the terminals or in the cages with the hitters, while Brownie takes game planning. And I think where the intersection at which they meet has been a really pleasant development for us in the spring, because I think they work together well.
Last one before we let you go. Is there any different feeling for you going into this season? Is there just a little more optimism? I'm sure you're confident every offseason. Everybody feels good. But does this feel any different than years past?
Yeah, I think this is the best roster we've had. And, you know, but we've had three pretty good years. You know, one resulted in a playoff season. A couple of others were near misses. This team is more talented and deeper than those teams. You know, so I come into this season thinking, you know, I believe we're a playoff team. I believe we have the ability this year to go win our division. We have the pitching once we get into the playoff dance to do some damage. And I think we are one of those teams as early as opening day that other contenders look at and say, boy, I hope they don't get on the floor. Because when you look at The Rock and you look at George Kirby and Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller and Andres Munoz, Matt Brash, Greg, it starts to add up. And you know, the short season and the postseason, it has a chance to be kind to us if we can figure out how to get there.
President of Baseball Operations, Jerry DePoto, has been our guest here on opening day. We can't wait. Looking forward to it. Always appreciate you, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jerry.
Appreciate it.
There you go. Jerry DePoto, he's fired up. Everybody's fired up. We're excited. It's opening day. Adam Gresh is dressed up. Look at that.
He's got a new haircut.
You never see that.
Looks very GQ.
you never see this. You know he's excited. That's a rarity.
Thanks, Jerry.
Oh, people, there's definitely a different sense of optimism. It feels like, you know, whether we're talking to players or people in the front office like Kevin Martinez or Jerry, and you hear it and read it with some of the fans that text in and listeners and things like that. So I think everybody's got sort of a cautious optimism, and it's not about the talent. It's about just health. Can they be available? Can they be out there? And if they are, I think people feel like, yeah, this is going to be maybe one of the deepest teams they've had in a number of years.
I like what he said about Brant Brown, too. You know, I mean, because you look at all the things that were on, you know, JD's plate, and, you know, he had so much going on there that it's already having an effect. And, you know, look, this is the kind of weather we're talking about early in the season, right, where the air is thick and, you know, how do you get runs? And
is that a marine layer out there?
I'm trying not to say marine layer, Bob, because I'm not like a, you know, I'm not a weatherman or anything like that. But, yeah, I liked hearing that. And look, you can always get more coaches, and there's no limit for those guys and bringing them in. And that sounds like it's going to make a big difference. But, yeah, the whole thing really is kind of coming together at the right time. And I don't know that we felt this good at the beginning of camp, but, you know, or spring training, I should say. But, sorry, I'm getting into football talk there. But, you know, I felt like by the end of spring training, you look at the numbers, there was nothing really to not like. I mean, Sam Haggerty did not have a good spring at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other than that, everybody that you wanted to, you know, see something out of, you pretty much saw it. And whether it means something or not, I don't know. I'm looking at this lineup going, you got Ty France, who I think he looks fixed, and physically he looks much better. You know, if he's your eight spot right there, that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, I would imagine we'll see him moving up in that lineup.
I sure hope so.
But, yeah, it does. Listen, I mean, we went into this last year, and anybody that listened to the show knew I didn't feel good about what was going into the season. I didn't like it. I like what they did this offseason. In the end, now that it's completed, initially I was like everybody else, like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
What's going on here? And now you look at sort of the complete picture, and you've said it a number of times, I think, once they made the Polanco deal, and then you added that onto how Mitch looks and how he looked in spring, and Ty looking just physically different. It all of those things added up to people going, okay, I see what they're doing here. I see what they did. Yeah, you're cautious because of injuries, certainly, but I think people will see, if they're being objective and look at this lineup going, yeah, when they're all together and they're healthy, this is a lineup that's going to be a problem.
Well, and the other thing is, I had kind of forgotten about Mitch Haniger and what a solid guy he is. Mm. And he goes out and has a great spring. Would he hit four or five home runs?
Five.
Just looked incredibly confident at the plate. He's in good shape. And, you know, we talked to Jerry that, like, it's not like that guy is somebody that's going to wear down.
Yeah.
He's not going to have an oblique problem. That's so
although
funny.
He does have an oblique.
He does have them. That you was can so see funny that. When Jerry said that. Like, yeah, we didn't have those kinds of things. I'm like, yeah, I've said that before. Don't develop those muscles. Then you won't pull them.
Well, once you give things a name, you know how it goes.
That too, just like the hip drop tackle.
Well, somebody else we know is very excited about opening day is going to join us next. Can't wait to hear about his Mariners group chat. I'm sure is very fired up. Lots of chat, lots of text going back and forth. The one, the only, Paul Moyer will join us next year as we continue live from the Hatback Bar and Grill. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.